You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our reading today tells the story of an event that traditionally takes place on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's a beautiful setting of rolling hills, and today at a place called Tabgha is the site of a beautiful Byzantine-style church with a famous mosaic of loaves and two fishes in the floor. One of the surprising elements for many pilgrims to this site today is that instead of the rolling fields of grain Jesus would have likely seen, climate change has altered the surrounding environment enough that visitors are now surrounded by rolling fields of bananas. I like to imagine how different the story might have been if Jesus were here today. Instead of loaves and fishes, maybe the story would have had Jesus saying, "Take, peel, and eat." Never mind. Regardless, this story is often referred to as the feeding of the 5,000 and was so important to the early church that it's the only miracle story, other than the resurrection, that appears in all four Gospels. There are some variations in the telling. In Luke's version, Jesus taps a boy as the source of the loaves and fish. But basically, Jesus has been teaching a crowd all day and then uses the basic need for sustenance as an object lesson for the disciples. We'll hear Mark's version today, where Jesus has the tired and grumpy disciples collect food and, much to their surprise, feed the whole crowd with plenty left over.
Our words of wisdom are from Mark chapter 6, verses 32 through 44.
And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. As Jesus went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. When it grew late, his disciples came to him and said,
"This is a deserted place, and the hour is now very late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding country and villages and buy something for themselves to eat."
But he answered them, "You give them something to eat."
They said to him, "Are we to go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?"
And he said to them, "How many loaves have you? Go and see."
When they had found out, they said, "Five and two fish."
Then he ordered them to get all the people to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and of fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves. And he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And he divided the two fish among them all.
And all ate and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. Those who had eaten the loaves numbered 5,000 men.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Our story today about the multiplication of the loaves and fishes is most often portrayed as a supernatural miracle. But if Jesus were to try and pull this off today, I think even he would have had a hard time. Have you ever noticed how fishy the Gospels are? Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John are all filled with fish stories. Jesus calling fisher folk, disciples hailing from fishing villages like Magdala and Bethsaida, stories told about great catches. The emphasis on fish is not a coincidence, because in Jesus' day in Galilee, it was all about fish. And what most folks don't understand is that in the first century, The Sea of Galilee was undergoing a huge economic and political change. During Jesus' life, Herod Antipas was tetrarch, or governor, of Galilee. But decades before, in order to curry favor with Caesar Augustus, Antipas' father, Herod the Great, had built Caesarea Maritima, an impressive harbor and city that he named for the emperor. Well, Antipas wanted to do some impressing of his own, so he moved his capital to a city on the Lake of Galilee and named his new capital after the current emperor, Tiberius. But moving the capital was for economic reasons, too. The Romans were addicted to a sauce made out of fermented fish guts called garum. Now, don't turn up your nose. You use garum's great-great-grand sauce, Worcestershire sauce, all the time. The industry was booming, and Antipas was busy commercializing the lake, essentially monopolizing its fish, dried, salted, and sauced for export, and thereby increasing revenue, tax, and tribute. Along with Antipas' relocation and renaming of the capital came a level of commercialization that drastically changed the economic situation for all those who had used the lake freely as communal property before the 20s of the Common Era. "But wait," insisted the occupied Jewish natives. "The Psalms say that the earth is the Lord's and all that's in it. So the lake and all its fish are still ours to share, right?" "Wrong," said Antipas. To make sure everyone was clear on exactly who the lake and its resources belonged to, Antipas even changed its name from Sea of Galilee to the Sea of Tiberias. So, for Jesus, the economics of the lake served as an object lesson. People were scared. They'd taken for granted that the lake and its resources would always be there. But now, everything was being taken over by Rome and the Jewish elites. People were beginning to question whether they could depend on the abundance of God and started to hoard what little they had. Who knew where their next meal might come from? Folks started to look at their neighbors with suspicion, as competition for resources that everyone felt were dwindling before their very eyes. "Every person for themselves!" And that's the dynamic Jesus was fighting against in today's passage. It's the end of a long day, and not only is everybody hungry, the new economics of the lake has conditioned them to be suspicious of one another. And in a pre-convenience store or fast food culture, the disciples are rightfully a little anxious and want to send the people away to find themselves food before there's a crisis. But Jesus tells them, "How about you give them something to eat?" Reluctantly, the disciples gather what food that they could find, and understandably, it's not much, just 5 loaves and 2 fish. Nevertheless, Jesus made a big deal out of it. He took it, blessed it, broke it, and gave it to the disciples to distribute. In other words, Jesus demonstrated a willingness to share everything they had with the conviction that if everyone else did the same, there'd be enough for everyone. Notice what didn't happen. Remember the miracle in the story of the Exodus? Jesus didn't ask God to rain manna from heaven. He didn't have to. Jesus knew there was already enough for everyone if they shared. So Jesus asked his followers to lead by example. People were not stupid. In a time when food was not readily available on every corner like it is today, people always carried food with them. They wouldn't wander out into a deserted place to listen to some preacher without having brought food. But human nature being what it is, people were cautious. And looking around at their neighbors, they were also suspicious. I'm sure Wanda McGillicuddy didn't bring food. I'm not getting out my food where Wanda can see it, or else she'll want some. But imagine, once the disciples started sharing what they had, people began to follow suit. Even Wanda got out the bread that she had brought. Generosity begets generosity. God's providing for all is in the sharing. Mark's parable says there is more than enough food when it passes through the hands of divine justice, when it is taken, blessed, broken, and given out, when food is seen as God's consecrated gift. Do you recognize those four verbs? Took, blessed, broke, and gave. We say them every time we share communion, where Jesus took the bread, blessed it, broke it, and gave it to his followers. Took, blessed, broke, and gave. Those four actions. We see those same words again in Luke's Walk to Emmaus story, remember? After the crucifixion, two dejected disciples were walking home to Emmaus when a mysterious traveler joins them on the road, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him as Jesus. They tell him about Jesus and their disappointment over how things had played out. In response, Jesus lays out a whole Bible study lesson about himself, but they still don't recognize him. But what happens next is the climax of the story. As they get close to Emmaus, Jesus makes like he's going to go on, but they insist that he stay with them and share in a meal. When this stranger was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed, broke it, and gave it to them. And only then were their eyes opened. And when they recognized him, he vanished. Crossan says that this parable tells us a lot about earliest Christianity's practices. First comes the reading of the scriptures, which is important, but not enough. To really reveal the presence of Christ in their midst takes the sharing of their resources with a random stranger. Only then, in the sharing, can you announce that Christ had been made known in the breaking of the bread. And the verb break emphasizes that this is a sharing of communal food rather than the hoarding of one's personal supply. Our success, our potential, our effectiveness, not only as a community of Jesus followers, but as a broader civic community, is directly related to our ability to share our resources. Just consider the recent furor from some corners, including a lot of Christians, when the word got out that the state of Minnesota had made free breakfasts and lunches available to all public school students, resulting, in some cases, in both increased attendance and improved test scores. What? Some have howled. Is this communism? How dare you use our collective resources to help improve conditions for everyone? Methinks they have missed the point of Jesus' message. Insofar as we hoard what we have out of fear or insecurity or a sense of privilege, we cripple our capacity for shaping the whole world in the image of God's vision, this kingdom that Jesus spent his whole ministry trying to get us to understand. Look, it's no wonder that in the Lord's Prayer, the very first petition is, "Give us our daily bread." Because the resource of bread and its subsequent sharing is the primary means through which we make Jesus real in the world. And we won't get the point of the Lord's Prayer until we realize that the appeal for daily bread is not, "Give me this day my daily bread," but "Give us this day our daily bread." We're in this together, and life's resources are meant to be shared. Plus, we do well to remember, as Woodrow Wilson once said, "No one can worship God or love their neighbor on an empty stomach." Once upon a time, a very prim and proper lady decided to top off her shopping spree at some of the finer stores of London with a proper cup of tea, intending to also enjoy some gourmet cookies that she'd brought in her purse. She proceeded to sit down at a table for two and ordered a pot of tea. Because it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the shop was crowded, and a man came in and sat in the other chair at her table. While it's not essential to the story, it might be helpful to know that the woman's assumptions may have been influenced by the fact that this man happened to be Jamaican. The woman proceeded to take out her paper, read, and, leisurely sip her tea. She then took one of the cookies and began to eat it. Much to her surprise, the man, who had also ordered a pot of tea, also took a cookie and began to eat it. She was mildly irritated, but she didn't say anything. She just turned back to the paper she was reading. She then took a second cookie, and shocking, he reached over and took a cookie. She glared at him over her paper and was truly indignant. While she was glaring at him, he smiled, took the fifth and last cookie, and breaking it in two, offered her half. She was livid. She refused the cookie, got up and stormed out, plopping down cash at the register as she went home in a huff. At the front door of her house, she fumbled in her purse for her key. "Oh, my Lord," she thought. In her purse was her package of cookies, unopened. It dawned on her that all along she was eating the man's cookies, and she was the one who was indignant. In reality, he was sharing with her what he had brought to the table. I wonder, how often do we let our assumptions, prejudices, and conditioning make us like that woman? Psalm 24 says, "The earth is the Lord's and all that's in it." I don't think we really get what Jesus was on about until we realize what Jesus was trying to tell us, that food is meant for sharing. Everything we have in life is a gift. We don't have bread or get bread because we deserve it. We have bread and get bread because we have been unbelievably blessed. As we share the gifts of God's creation in a way that assures that everyone gets enough, especially those who are in need, the closer we get to living into this kingdom of God that Jesus has called us part of. The problem is not, nor has it ever been, a matter of the supply of life's essentials. It's the distribution. In the end, the Lord's Prayer is not just about us receiving our daily bread, but that all are able to be filled. that all simply have enough. Be well. Don't forget, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. The link's in the description.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.